mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the games wouldn't happen without is why the Ohio High School Athletic Association has designated this as Officials Appreciation Week. Also this morning, to your health, bladder leakage or mild urinary incontinence is another issue many women are uncomfortable talking about, even though two-thirds struggle with it. We'll learn more. And happening around town, you know fall has arrived because it's time for the 35th annual Van Buren Apple Butter Festival. We'll get a preview. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. I don't know about you, but I've been following all of the coverage of Hurricane Milton, and I know that this is not going to impact our area, certainly in Northwest Ohio. Even the aftermath of Hurricane Milton will not impact us. It's just going to cut across Florida and then head out into the Atlantic, unlike Helene, which brought us some rain showers and so on, because it was such a huge storm and it made its way up the eastern part of the U.S. And so it did give us some rain showers and stuff like that. We did get the after effects of Helene. Not going to be the case with Milton, but just can't tear myself away from some of these stories. It is just amazing. The latest estimates of a worst case scenario from analysts, early estimates of a worst-case scenario from analysts say that Hurricane Milton could cause as much as $175 billion in damages. And, of course, that is on top of the devastation that Hurricane Helene already caused in Florida. The size of the potential damage will depend on the timing and location of Milton's landfall. Still looks like it's going to be Tampa, but now it is tracking just south of the city of Tampa. That may not be good news for Tampa, though, because from what I am given to understand, and I don't know all that much about hurricanes, but from what I am given to understand, the rain will be more intense north of the eye. So if this goes south of Tampa, that is not good news for the Bay region. You know that it's a monster storm because Waffle House is closing. Waffle House closing restaurants in the projected path of Milton, which that never happens. When, as a matter of fact, they actually have a sort of unofficial Waffle House index as an informal way for first responders to tell where conditions are the worst or expected to be the worst. The Waffle House index. If the Waffle House closes, you know you've got a major storm. But the restaurant, known for being up being open 24/7, is shut down around 33 locations in Florida as the storm, which is currently a Category 5, predicted to make landfall tonight or early tomorrow. More likely tonight at some point. Whether it'll still be a Category 5 when it makes landfall is not expected, but they're talking really strong Category 3 or perhaps Category 4. This is going to be a monster. Hurricane Milton turned into a Category 5 with impressive speed yesterday. This was the other part of the story. It's not expected to be a Category 5 when it makes landfall, but it intensified to Category 5 a matter of hours, and that is unusual. Again, I'm not a hurricane aficionado, but in reading the coverage, the experts were stunned at how quickly Milton intensified. So why did and how did this storm go from barely a hurricane to such a dangerous force in less than 24 hours? Rapid intensification, it says here, can happen for a number of reasons. Warm sea surface temperatures, low wind shear, moisture, and bursts of thunderstorms can all contribute to a storm's strength. Rapid intensification has been happening more in recent years, and studies suggest that climate change is to blame. As the oceans warm, the frequency of major hurricanes like Milton is expected to increase. So we are paying very close attention and certainly thinking very much of all of our friends in the Sunshine State of Florida today. They're in closing the Disney parks in Orlando. So, I mean, this is a big storm. This is a big storm. And a friend of mine that lives in Florida around the Tampa region posted on Facebook yesterday, just in case, I apologize for everything. It said, to my friends, just in case we don't make it through, I apologize for everything. Just a blanket, blanket cleansing of the soul there just before Hurricane Milton impacts. And the it's saying nearly 20% of gas stations in Florida are out of gas as people are panic buying either to ride out the storm, which hopefully there won't be too many people riding out the storm, or evacuating. And the roads are jam-packed. It's just a mess in Florida. But certainly thoughts and prayers for safety and a speedy recovery. A couple of other interesting items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Researchers at the University of Waterloo have discovered differences in the way men and women metabolize food. Now, this is interesting science here. They find that women's bodies are more efficient at burning fat, while men were more efficient at burning carbs. Scientists suspect that the differences in men and women's livers could play a big role to this. Lead author Stephanie Abo says, "We live busy lives, so it's important to understand how seemingly inconsequential decisions, such as what to have for breakfast, can affect our health and our energy levels. According to the results of the study, a high-carb breakfast of toast or oatmeal might work better for men, while women might want to stick to high-fat options like eggs or avocado." So, maybe a little avocado toast for you this morning, ladies. Well, I guess avocado without the toast. The guys can have the toast, but not the avocado. So anyway, that's to keep in mind. You're starting your day. By the way, speaking of science, I saw this on the Newswire. Talk about amazing science. A company in England, Gemini Genetics, is now open for business where they can take DNA from a deceased pet and create an identical copy. They can clone your pet. If your beloved pet passes away, you can have a clone produced. The process can take up to a year and can cost upwards of $80,000. Man. I mean, I love my dog, but $80,000 to have another one just like him? I don't know. Lab manager Lucy Morgan says, quote, "There is taboo around cloning, as it's still a relatively new science, but in the same way our mobile phones have evolved in the past 20 years, the technology surrounding cloning has evolved as well." The lab, Gemini Genetics, actually has its own mascot, which is a clone, a Cocker Spaniel clone named Gem, which was made from a piece of a dog's ear. So, no, that's just weird. That's just weird. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day from the world of sports. Were you watching the football games, college football games over the weekend? On Saturday, a lot of big upsets in college football. It really through the college football rankings for a loop, and who knows how that will affect the playoffs at the end of the season. Still a lot of football to be played, but it was a monster day of upsets in college football this past Saturday. None bigger than Vanderbilt's win over number one ranked Alabama. Unranked Vanderbilt knocked off the number one team in the country, Alabama, team they haven't beaten for like 4 decades. And they tore down the goalposts at Vanderbilt Stadium after the win. Fans stormed the field, of course, and they tore down the goalposts. And now fans are paying big money to own a piece of the goalpost that was torn down after the big win. University officials say the uprights and crossbar sections of the goalpost that were recovered from the Cumberland River, because the fans carried the goalpost out of the stadium and tossed it in the Cumberland River, sections of the uprights and crossbar that were recovered from the river were cut into small pieces and are now being put up for sale. An 8-inch piece is going for around $4,000, and a 4-inch section right around $1,000 online. So if you want to have a piece of college football history, one of the greatest upsets of all time in NCAA Division I bowl division football, it can be yours for $1,000 or two. That would be pretty cool. If you are a an SEC fan, especially, and especially a Vanderbilt fan, I can imagine that they will be scooping that up to remember forever. It was definitely quite a sight at the end of that game. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today with a high around 70, mostly clear tonight, low in the mid-40s. The public's invited to an open house to tour the new first responder training facility in Findlay. The Strix Center, which stands for Simulated Tactical Response and Incident Command Training, is located behind Fire Station 4 on County Road 236. Fire Chief Josh Eberle says the public played a big part in making the facility a reality.
The buy-in we had from the community was fantastic. We just had an unbelievable amount of public support financially for this project.
The chief says in almost every emergency, there's a fire department, law enforcement, and an EMS component all working alongside one another. And the Strix Center now allows that joint training to happen on a regular basis. At the open house on Saturday, October 19th, people will have a chance to meet and talk with firefighters who will share insights about their work and discuss fire safety practices. Get more details about the open house in the story on our website. Early voting has begun for the November 5th election.
And if you're looking to vote early in person, well, you can do that at your local Board of Elections. And we know there's going to be one big hot button topic that's going to be taking a lot of attention on the ballot, and that is Issue 1.
A proposed constitutional amendment will appear on your ballot as Issue 1. It aims to put the political map-making process in the hands of citizens. No politicians, lobbyists, or political party members will be allowed on the commission.
ONN's Candace Hare reporting. See what other local races and issues are on the ballot in this story on our website. Hancock Public Health is conducting a short survey to gather information to better understand the health needs in the community. The health department says the survey will help them develop the 2026-28 Hancock County Community Health Assessment, a process conducted every 3 years. People are encouraged to fill out the survey and let the health department know how it can make the community a healthier place to live. We have a link to that survey in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, high school football is chugging along toward the playoffs. Tournament season already underway or will soon be in many other sports. And the Ohio High School Athletic Association has designated this as Officials Appreciation Week for the fall season. Amanda Harding is OHSAA Manager of Officiating Administration and is also a registered official herself in both football and basketball. Amanda, talk a little bit about the concept of Officials Appreciation Week and why it is important.
Extremely important that we find ways to continue to support our officials so that they want to continue to officiate. National Federation has joined forces with the local state associations to encourage all around good sportsmanship, especially towards our officials.
We mentioned that you are an official yourself, not only for high school, but also at the college level as well, I understand, which is one of the things that many people don't realize. Many officials don't just work high school contests.
That is true.
And at each level, there is this dedication of time spent not just on the field, but in the classroom as well. Talk a little bit about what actually goes into being an official on a year-to-year basis.
We have had the opportunity to join forces with RefReps, which provides a quicker access to becoming an official in the state of Ohio. Because they can now take the course online. Once you've taken the course online and passed the test, taken your concussion course, then we highly encourage an official to join their local association in the area in which they live, in their community. Mm-hmm. The local associations work directly with the official to help provide mentors, and also a new official is required to, or every official is required to attend at least 4 local meetings. And those local meetings review rules and they review the mechanics, you know, the aspect of being on the field or on the pitch or on the court. There's a lot of different nuances that go into officiating that many people are not aware of. And the local associations help provide that guidance. So let's say an example for myself, I have attended my high school association meetings and participated in the state meetings because you have to take a state meeting. And those review all the new rules and the new mechanics of, you know, where you need to be, what you need to be looking at, and how to communicate with your crew.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, last night I attended my local area college meeting, and we reviewed plays last evening and talked about the different mechanics of, like, you know, for example, I work line of scrimmage, you know, what do I need to be looking at, and so forth. So there's a lot of time that goes involved if you want to be really good at it. And so we want to make sure that everybody's aware how much time that our officials do put in. It's not a full-time job. You know, we have full-time jobs and then we go to our assignment.
Mm-hmm. And it is a tremendous investment of time and energy. And, you know, the other thing that many people don't realize is that most of these men and women who officiate their kids' games don't have kids of that age anymore. Maybe they did it one time, but those kids have graduated, they've gotten older, and yet they are still out there officiating for the benefit of other people's kids.
That is correct. You know, we are growing in our numbers in most of our sports, and a lot of that growth has come from our high school and college age student athletes. However, we would really like to see more of our officials come from those parents who their children are done playing, because they have a really good understanding of the time that's involved for coaches and for players, and they themselves have a good feel for the game and understand more of the nuances and have some life experience.
We talk about the importance of Officials Appreciation Week. You are also an educator and former school administrator. Talk about the impact it has on a student when there is a lack of appreciation and respect for the role of a sports official. I know this has been a growing concern for a number of years, is the general tenor of the way officials are sometimes treated, and the lessons that young people take away from some of those less than ideal interactions.
You know, young people, we learn from what they see and what they hear. We know the little ones, they're sponges, right? And as they grow and they're at the high school level, they're still sponges, and they are impacted based on maybe how their coach is acting or how the fans are acting. And so then it it translates then onto the playing field. And so, you know, sometimes they may not make good decisions or approach the game in the manner in which they should. But the towards fans and spectators towards officials, it also deters the, I know some officials who said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. You know, I don't want to deal with this. And so then you have if you have a lack of officials who cannot be there specifically, let's say baseball and softball, we know there are some areas where games may not be played because there aren't enough umpires out there to officiate the game. And so it does impact. So now the kid does not have, a student athlete doesn't have an opportunity to even play. They put in all the effort to, practice and prepare for a game. And then, lo and behold, the game may be canceled because we don't have the umpires.
I was going to say, pointing out that is not just conjecture. That has actually happened even in our area, that games have to be moved or rescheduled or, worst case scenario, even scratched off the schedule because there aren't enough officials to go around.
That is 100% correct. That's happening all over the state of Ohio.
And as you were talking about some of the challenges of the job, I could remember the U.S. Army used to have a slogan, it's the toughest job you'll ever love. And I think the same can be said for officiating high school sports. It is a challenging job, one that is getting more challenging each year. And there is, as you were saying, a great need to grow the ranks of high school officials. How does one get started if they are interested in, learning more about becoming an official?
If you go to Ohio High School Athletic Association's website, we have a tab labeled officiating, and under that tab is to become an official, and it walks you through the process of how to set up your online account with Dragonfly Athletics, creating your profile, paying for your the course up front, taking the course, your concussion course, those types of things. And then also encouraging people then to join their local associations in order to, become part of that. We like to say the officiating family or community. And once you're part of that family and you have established some strong relationships with other officials, and I have lifetime mentors that I still contact and reach out to, not just for the officiating side of things, but just about life in general.
Yeah.
And once you have put yourself in, put in the time and effort and created those relationships, it's kind of addicting. It's something that, you're giving back, but it also gives back to you. You're being, you're continuing to be active and moving. And it's that social interaction that we need to have as human beings. And it's a very positive one. If you put the time and effort into it, it does come back to you.
I go back to that slogan. It's the toughest job you'll ever love. And it really is. Again, Amanda Harding is OHSAA Manager of Officiating Administration. And again, this week is Fall Sports Officials Appreciation Week. Amanda, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you were with us yesterday, you remember we were talking about a campaign to end so-called period poverty, the issue of low-income women who can't afford hygiene products and end up missing work or school as a result, or end up using potentially unsafe alternatives. It is something that many of us, including myself, didn't even know was an issue because it is not something that we openly talk about very often. Well, to your health this morning, I want to talk about something else, another uncomfortable subject, but one that is actually very common, bladder leakage or female mild urinary incontinence. But there is no reason that this should be a taboo subject because it is so common that it affects, it says here, almost 80 million women. Joining 80 million are impacted by this, whether you realize it or not. Joining us this morning is female empowerment coach Laura Gimbert. Laura, as you say, the first step, and this is, you know, a familiar refrain, the first step is talking about it, sort of bringing it out of the shadows.
Yes, it's taboo because it's embarrassing and people feel very lonely. But actually, as you mentioned, 78 million women in the U.S., which are two-thirds of women, are experiencing it. So it's definitely not uncommon, and we should be speaking about it so that people don't feel lonely and so we can find solutions, right?
I also think that it's interesting you frame this as sort of a women's empowerment issue. Why is it important to think of it in those terms?
Well, if we have the empowerment to talk about it, we will, first of all, not stress and have so much anxiety through this issue, right? And also, it impacts our life, not just our physical health, but our emotional health and finding the solution. So by talking to our friends and family, we may find that a lot of them are experiencing it too, and we may be recommended to a pelvic floor therapist that can help. By talking to a trained expert, we can also find treatments and new perspectives that can help our day-to-day in an emotional and physical way too.
Because there are actually things that people can do, products and treatments and such that can help.
Yes, exactly. So there's plenty of good options, whether it comes to natural solutions as well as products, as you mentioned. So for products, I love Fit Right Fresh Start. They have a complete line of products with variety of sizes that meets all needs, whether it's discrete liners for moderate support to severe support with underwear. They're also the only brand that has Arm & Hammer baking soda for odor control so that you can feel more confident knowing that you're not going to smell. And also it's super absorbent. If you need it, it can hold up to 5 cups of liquid. And it has no chemicals, which is super important with feminine care products. But also natural solutions that you can do to minimize and improve the issue. So, for example, pelvic floor therapy is the best thing you can do. It's 5 to 10 minutes a day. It can be done any day, any time of the day. It can be done for 20-year-olds and 80-year-olds. So it's super easy, not just Kegels. There's a lot of different things you can do. So I would suggest doing that because it can strengthen the pelvic floor, which supports the bladder, which will make it leak less. So that is extremely important.
The bottom line, and I think this is important, is that this really is a medical issue. It is something that you really should talk with a professional to find out what are the best options for your particular situation, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can talk to your physician, but you can also talk to a pelvic floor therapist that is specialized in this specifically. And then there's a ton of support groups online, too. If you feel embarrassed, you can start there as well.
Yeah. The bottom line is we want to bring this out of the shadows. And what message ultimately would you have for women, particularly that are experiencing these issues of bladder leakage, some minor incontinence, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would say don't be embarrassed. Definitely everyone experiences at some point, the majority of us do. It can happen anytime from your 20s to your elderly age. It can happen with age, but it can also happen with life events like pregnancy and birth. So definitely be proactive about it. Take charge, talk to people around you, find solutions and use products like Fit Right Fresh Start so that it doesn't disrupt your day-to-day life. Because a lot of people end up stopping doing daily things like jumping or, you know, playing with their kids because of this issue.
Yeah, that's the one thing that we don't want is that, you know, this shouldn't detract from your enjoyment of life, certainly. And as we mentioned, the best source of information for your specific situation is going to be a professional in this area. That being said, as you mentioned, Laura, there are a number of online resources where people can turn if that is where they feel most comfortable in taking that first step. Let's mention some of those resources again. Where can folks find more info?
Yeah, I love this website, Fit Right fitrightfreshstart.com. It has a lot of resources, educational content. It also has all the products we mentioned. So that's a great place to start.
Again, female empowerment coach, certified doula, Laura Gimbert with us this morning. Laura, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. Case in point, Toledo police say a man was intoxicated when he tried to teach his 9-year-old son how to drive this past weekend. It's not bad enough to teach your 9-year-old son how to drive. He was intoxicated when he was doing so. The whole incident led to an accident, surprise, surprise, that left the man injured. According to news reports, 36-year-old Cleijon Williams was trying to teach his son how to back out of the driveway. Again, his son is 9 years old, and Mr. Williams was intoxicated at the time. So he's trying to teach his son how to back out the driveway when the boy hit the gas pedal, moving the vehicle forward and hooking the father, who had been standing outside the open driver's side door. The father was pulled under the vehicle and actually run over by the vehicle. He is, there's no word on the extent of his injuries. I'm not sure. Maybe there's an update now, but according to this report, no word on the extent of his injuries. Mr. Williams has been charged with endangering children. Although, really, honestly, he endangered himself more than anything. Apparently, teaching his 9-year-old son how to drive, and he was intoxicated at the time. Not too bright. Speaking of people doing not so smart things, this from Poolsbo, Washington. Is that how you pronounce it? Poolsbo, P-O-U-L-S-B-O, is the town in Washington State. I don't know where this is in Washington, but a woman there in Poolsbo called authorities when 100 raccoons showed up looking for food, showed up at her doorstep. The woman explained that she had been giving food to the raccoons for some 35 years, but the population grew rapidly just in the past 6 weeks. What do you expect to happen? You're feeding the raccoons. According to the report, the word got out in raccoon land and they all showed up at her house expecting a free meal. The animals, according to the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office, the animals surround her home day and night. Animal control is working to find a solution. But the bottom line, according to wildlife officials, don't feed wild animals. When they find they have a reliable food source, they're going to keep coming back to it. And yeah, they're going to share the word with their friends. Yeah, bring their friends along for a free meal as well. Don't feed wild animals. 100 raccoons showed up looking for food. What do you expect to happen? Story out of Hawaii here. In the broken news, doesn't often happen that we have stories out of Hawaii. I don't know that they don't do dumb things. It's just, you know, they're way out there in the middle of the ocean. We don't hear about them quite as often. But we do have this story. Bloodshed at a Wendy's restaurant in Hawaii as two employees were stabbed on Sunday morning. This is the backstory. Police say the altercation began with a customer who was moving furniture in the restaurant. The employees asked him to leave and then escorted him out of the restaurant. Just for good measure, at that point, one of the employees punched the suspect and he responded by stabbing both of them. Two employees escort the guy out of the door, the restaurant, and just for good measure, one of them decides to punch him in the face and so he responds by stabbing the employees. The suspect, described as a man in his 60s, was arrested and remains behind bars. The moral of that story that I take away, don't move the furniture at Wendy's. Don't move the furniture. It can turn very serious very quickly there, apparently, if you move the furniture at Wendy's restaurant. They don't take too kindly to that, apparently. And a couple of other items here in the broken news. From the international file here, a mechanic working at a museum in the Netherlands was just trying to do a good deed, but it turned out he accidentally threw away a valuable work of art. So as a mechanic, he's not an art, curator by any stretch, just a mechanic working at this museum in the Netherlands when he came across what he thought were a couple of empty dented beer cans that someone had carelessly discarded beside an elevator. So he did what he thought was the polite thing and tossed the beer cans in the nearest trash receptacle. What he didn't realize was that the beer cans were actually part of a piece of artwork by French artist Alexandre Levay entitled All the Good Times We Spent Together. So he threw away the beer cans. A museum spokesperson explained to reporters that artworks in this museum are often left at unusual places, such as the elevator, to surprise visitors. Make sure they are paying attention to all of their surroundings. Just a pleasant. However, the mishap has caused the museum to rethink its presentation of the artworks. By displaying art in unexpected places, we amplify this experience and keep visitors on their toes. But in this case, it backfired, according to a spokesperson for the museum. The mechanic, who was just trying to do a good deed, is not in any trouble for it. Fortunately, somebody discovered the beer cans, the dented beer cans in the trash, realized what they were, and the art is back on display. But probably more clearly delineated than it was before, I would imagine. And finally, in the broken news this morning, because this is the Halloween season, I thought I would share this that I saw on the newswire. With the arrival of the month of October, if it triggers your fear of a zombie apocalypse, we have a list for a worst-case scenario. The states where you would be safe from, where you would be safest from a zombie apocalypse. The latest ranking, and I think they do this each year, they rank all of the states as to where you would be most likely to survive a zombie apocalypse just in time for Halloween. According to the rankings, California scores 100 out of 100 on its survivability scale. So you are certain to survive in California. Texas comes in second at slightly more than an 88% chance of survival, followed by Florida, Virginia, and Michigan at number five with about a 65% chance of survival in the event of a zombie apocalypse. For comparison, you would have about a 45% chance of survival in Ohio. About a 45% chance. The one place you would not want to be is Rhode Island, which has a 0% chance of survival of a zombie apocalypse. That seems to be the place where all the undead would dream to be. Some of the factors considered when weighing your odds against the zombies: population density, defensive resources, and freshwater accessibility. Overall, the news really isn't great for the entirety of the United States. Americans overall have just a 31% chance of overcoming the undead, according to this ranking. So there you have it, the latest statistics on zombie apocalypse survivability. in honor of Halloween being right around the corner. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When the rumors are flying, getting the facts matters more than ever. At WFIN, we're your trusted source and will always present the story only after verifying the information with trusted sources. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust in us to present just the facts when covering events impacting Findlay and Hancock County. You can depend on us to get the story right every time on social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. How often do you carry cash? These days, we live in an increasingly cashless society, but there are still plenty of people who do carry a little bit of cash these days. New poll of 2,000 adults find that 18% of Gen Zers, young adults, who you would think would be least likely to carry cash, but 18% say they always carry cash because they frequent cash-only businesses. And there are still a few of those out there. 26% of all Americans say they keep cash on hand just as fun money. And that's a bit concerning. 29% of respondents in the survey say that spending cash doesn't count because spending cash means that their bank account balance does not decrease. So they say it doesn't count. That's really not the way money works. But there is that psychological thing. This survey was conducted for the financial services, or commissioned by the financial services platform Chime, which says that contrary to what many people may believe, cash still plays a key role in our society. 34% of all Americans say they are likely to carry cash, and 64% of Americans in the survey, 64, so nearly two-thirds of Americans admit that at one point or another they haven't had cash on hand when they needed it. There are still times when you need to have cash and you don't have. Most recently, I had this happen the other day. Some kids came to the door. They were selling something, or a fundraiser, you know, for, I don't know, an organization for the school or whatever. But they had to have cash. I didn't have cash, so I couldn't help out. So, lesson learned. Always carry cash, even in 2024. So, happening around town, you know fall has arrived because it is time for the annual Van Buren Apple Butter Festival. Ed May and Jack Marshall are with us in the studio this morning. 35th annual. Did I read that right? 35th annual? Man, I tell you, that is... this is a generational thing.
It is. It is.
That's one of the things that makes it fun. So talk a little bit about what's going on. Where do we start here?
Okay, well, let's start with the apple butter, and I'll let Jack talk about the towers.
Okay.
So the apple butter starts at 9 to 3 on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and we're featuring a lot of crafters and vendors, and I think there's 80 of them mm-hmm. in total. And also, we got food trucks out there this year. We've got the Sheriff's Department coming with their Bearcat tactical vehicle, and we got the health department coming out for vaccines and flu shots from 9 to 12.
Okay, very good. And you mentioned the tower. This is a special presentation this year at the festival from the Tunnel Towers Foundation.
Correct.
So talk about getting this here.
So the Tunnel to Towers Foundation was founded shortly after the World Trade Center bombing in mm-hmm. 2001
okay.
By a family of a firefighter. And they wanted to do something to be able to support the first responders who passed in the terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started this foundation. Their first goal was to pay off the mortgages for all of the families who lost someone.
Yeah.
And then after that, they found, we've taken care of most of that. We want to do something more. And so they started building smart homes for families of military service members who had lost limbs during the war on terror.
Yeah.
And then to help raise money to add to their offerings, they started a 9/11 mobile exhibit, and it travels around the country. It is simply, it looks like a very patriotic semi-truck,
mm-hmm.
but then it converts into an 1,100 square foot mobile exhibit, slide outs like an RV, mm-hmm. and they can move about 100 people an hour through it.
Wow.
They have pieces of the building on display. They have artifacts taken from the rubble mm-hmm. and uniforms of first responders who were there. And this year, when we have them coming, we are lucky enough. We happen to have two retired captains from the New York Fire Department who were on site as the guides for us. And so they are going to speak with our students for 2 days. We have things set up for Thursday during school. We have Van Buren students are all going through grades 5 through 12. And then Friday, we've invited other local schools to bring students over. That's going all day Friday, and then it's open to the public all day on Saturday, 9 to 3, during the Apple Butter Festival.
Wow, that is tremendous, and what a terrific resource to be able to bring to the community, really bringing that to life.
Yes.
Because, you know, it doesn't seem like it's been that long ago, but the students especially have no memory of this. They were not around at that point.
Yeah, 23 years ago.
Yeah.
None of our students were alive, and even a few of our newest staff members were not alive.
Hmm.
And most of those in their, you know, in their early 20s don't have any memory of it.
Yeah.
And so we say that experience is the best teacher.
Yeah.
And so the closest we can get to helping our students understand what happened that day, because everything is just far enough back, it's like any other historical event,
right?
That it just becomes something in a textbook, something that they hear about, and the opportunity to give them something to be close to, hear from people who were there, really changes it.
It may be a little bit different than, say, 20 years after Pearl Harbor, in that we have the videos. We can see the replays of the news coverage and the media and all of that we didn't have in some of those previous seminal moments in history, but still, this is tangible, and that's a big difference.
Yes. That's when I'm telling students about 9/11, what happened, I have made it a point to show them video, and I talk to them about how emotional it is and what that does to people. I think the only way for them to truly understand how deep it hit was to really see it. And now adding this on top of that is really just adding to the understanding of our students and our community.
Yeah. So that is a big part of the Apple Butter Festival this weekend, this year's Apple Butter Festival. But of course, like we said, Ed, a lot of folks will come for the apple butter, the bean soup, the craft shows, and all of that, all of the vendors. And this is something everybody gets involved.
They do. So if you really looked at coming out there, we're probably looking at a minimum of 300. And with the exhibit, we're probably going to pound another 400 or 500. Yeah. So it's going to be busy. And also, we have a soccer tournament going on at the Soccerplex.
So have that going on throughout the community. Folks are their garage sales going on.
Yes.
This is like garage sale, community garage sale weekend. So that's going on at the athletic department, the art department, the music department, the FFA, all planning things surrounding the festival.
Yep. So the goal of our festival was engagement. So if you look at it, just about anybody associated with Van Buren is engaged with this festival.
Absolutely. And by the way, this is the Lions Club kind of organizes the main part of this with the craft show and everything. And you are collecting eyeglasses. I know that's the big charity mission of the Lions Club. Tell us about
it. It is.
Here.
So basically what we do is we collect glasses for about a year, and we come up between 200 to 300 pairs of glasses. Then those are sent to an organization. They do their thing in making them work well, and then it goes all over the world.
Yeah, for those who would not be able to afford them otherwise.
Yep, South America, Europe, wherever.
Yeah,
they're everywhere.
All over.
Yes.
And that really is the main function, the fundraiser for the Lions Club.
Correct. Right. You know, also, we do a lot of projects. We sponsor the Veterans Memorial in the square, the shelter house, dedicated to an ex-teacher that has passed away, and then the FFA community garden.
And because that was what I was going to ask as well, the proceeds from this event, you know, how are they used, or what do you use those for?
So basically what we do, whatever comes in, it goes right back out into the community.
So it is a terrific event. Mention again all of the details happening this Saturday, right?
So, yep, this Saturday, the Van Buren Apple Butterfest. We'll be showing craft vendors, food trucks, and especially what I'm excited for is the exhibit, the traveling memorial.
And that will be all at the high school, right?
Correct. It's in the parking lot right at the front of the building.
And there's no admission fee for
Correct.
This.
In fact, that's part of the contract. Tunnel to Towers Foundation does not allow admission, although they do have a box for donations.
And
so 9 to 3, we are out there all day. And get there early. It sounds like there's going to be quite a few people there.
I'm sure. It is a terrific event. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about the Van Buren Apple Butter Festival. And anything else to mention here real quickly?
The only real quick is if you're coming to the festival, there is a brand new north parking lot.
Okay.
Please use that because we're going to allow or limit the access to the south parking lot.
Very good. We've got that link up at goodmornings.net. You can learn all about it. And again, Ed May and Jack Marshall with us this morning. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Again, goodmornings.net is our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.